Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I've got Karina Wolf with me. Hey, Karina.
Hello.
All right, so this is fun for me. Karina was at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival last year in 2021, and she brought her comedy short, Lou, which I think is just one of the most fun and wonderfully made films I've seen in a while. It's because it relates to pet ownership. And you know what? All you got to do is look at social media and you realize just how important pets are in our lives. And you just take such a fresh perspective on it. So that obviously explains why you won the Audience Award for Best Short Film Comedy for Lou. So golf clap for that.
Thank you.
And I actually am not going to bother mentioning anything else. I guess we'll... You got that at Sherman Oaks Film Festival. It was a pleasure to meet you. I know you were in a really fun block, right? Because it was you along with your friends. Everyone got to be in the same block, which was kind of cool.
Yes, Jeff can't swim.
Jeff can't swim, which I didn't even realize until I saw it that night that you were there.
Yeah, I assistant directed it and like was an extra to fill in the space,
which was very cool. All right, well, but this is about you, So please fill me in. How did you get started? Because, I mean, you wrote and directed Lou, you also produced it, and as you said, you AD'd on your friend's film, and you act, and I think I know from your social media, like, you've had TV spots and stuff, like, cool stuff, So how did you get started on this crazy entertainment creativity thing?
I guess I just was born with the bug, always had it, was obsessed with movies and TV from my earliest memories. And my sisters were like 5 and 7 years older than me. And our idea of fun was them like directing me and pretend music videos. And I was a ham in school. If there was an option to like act out a scene instead of write a book report, I would be doing that. And my teachers would actually have to cut off like, okay, you can't act anymore out. You have to write a book report. And then I was always in ballet as well. But I do remember one specific, I was about 9. I started ballet when I was 3. And when I was 9, we were in this big production of The Nutcracker. It was like the Southwest Nutcracker in Tucson. So it was the first year, it was a big deal. And there was like 100 people in the cast from like, you know, 3 to 80 years old. And there was really good dancers. I wasn't necessarily like a really good dancer. But I got to play a kid at the party scene and I got to play a little boy. And I had just the most fun. And the teacher, she was kind of intense, but she like raged backstage after the performance where the news had been there. And she just started screaming at people that there was just no expression. No one was having any fun. And then like people were crying. And then she was like, there was one person on the entire stage that was like expressing themselves and acting and having a good time. And then she pointed me out. And again, I was like 9 years old and not ever pointed out for being the best dancer or anything, but she said, Karina Wolf, the cameras followed you like flies on a horse's ass. You should be an actress. And like in front of everyone. And I was like so embarrassed, but it definitely was a huge moment. Because I was always wanted to be an actor anyways, but it was kind of a validation.
Moments like that are huge. I can name my 11th grade English teacher. One of my buddies went up to him and said, who's the best writer in the class? And he went, hey, it's Howard.
That's amazing.
And when I overheard that, when my friend reported that to me, it was such a boost.
Yeah.
Huge boost to have an adult who's not one of your parents tell you you're good.
Yeah, for sure. So I kind of, by middle school, threw myself into theater. And then high school was my entire life and was the president of the theater troupe. And I had a really good high school program in Durango, Colorado. And so,
All right. So you grew up in Colorado.
Yeah. I grew up like in Tucson. And then when I was 11, we moved to Colorado. And yeah, it was just my whole life.
Two very cool places too.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and you were focused on performance at that point, or were you a creative kid who was like writing stories and things?
It was just performance. And I think I always thought about story, and I think I'm more inclined to directing. Writing has been more of a, like, I have to discipline myself to create stories. I think I do like creating them, but I think that I like kind of producing and directing and performing more.
Like if it was easy, and I know a lot of filmmakers who write because it's so hard to find good material.
Yeah.
So you write your own and you work on it and you get it to where you want it. But yeah, if there was a easier way to just say like, hey, could I like see 10 great 10-page shorts?
Yeah.
Like, that would probably be nice. But I don't know how people can source it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I have found love for writing, but it's always hard to start.
Yeah. But so as a kid performing high school, mm-hmm. and were you doing ballet the whole time too?
No. So when we moved to Colorado, there just wasn't the same level of ballet school. Like I was at a really good one in Tucson. And I was about to get my pointe shoes. And my sister, older sister, was like one of the best dancers in the company. So for a while, my parents were hauling her to Farmington, New Mexico to take dance lessons. And she would go away for the summers. But it just was hard. And I think I didn't start on, there was no like next level. And so I just got really into theater. But I was obsessed with movies and pop culture my entire life. My walls were just always covered with movie stars and movies, and was watching things far beyond what like an 11-year-old should be watching. And yeah, it's always just been my entire life.
Right. So you were enraptured in, and were you, because you had done plays and things, were you paying attention to the acting?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always remember when I was like 14 and my parents were out of town and one of their friends was watching me, and I convinced her and their whole friend group. So I took all my friends to a movie and they let me pick. And so I took them all to Magnolia, Paul Thomas Anderson's movie. And all of the adults were like, what did you just bring us to? So.
And wait, how old was that?
I was 14.
14?
Or 13 Magnolia, or 14.
Which I'm sure you really did appreciate.
Oh yeah,
film.
Oh, loved
even
every moment.
There were some things that went over your head, but yeah, that's not. I mean, it's not like Boogie Nights.
No, I saw Boogie Nights when I was like 12 or 13.
You're like, hey, it's the new movie from the Boogie Nights.
Oh yeah,
guy.
But I just sneak watch it, and yeah, I was always like, my sister would sneak me into Seven when I was like 11 or 12, and yeah, I was just always watching anything I could.
And you were, it sounds like you were also sort of into, like, there's kids who just get into actors, but then there's kids who, like, start to notice who the directors are.
Yeah,
and, like,
for sure.
Because I thought it was always a big transition when, instead of, like, going to see the new movie from the star you knew.
Yes.
Like, when you were drawn to the director, that was when you really clued into where it's actually at, right?
Yes, for sure. So I always like connected a lot with my like sister's older or friends, because I don't feel like any of my friends were ever aware of the same movies or things that I was. And
for sure. And having 5 and 7 year older sisters who don't exclude you, how nice of them to include you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
that was a pretty cool kid.
Yes. Yes, I'm married to someone with 2 older siblings who excluded her. So she's still. Like,
I mean, they did sometimes, but then I also like when they would have a huge party and I would be the one to wake up and tell them mom and dad are coming home and clean the house. So they like, I earned my keep.
You did. You were helpful.
Yeah. Cool. I never told on them.
Right. So loving movies and getting into that and then continuing to just perform once you were in Colorado doing the plays and things.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I went to Cornish in Seattle for college. It was like a conservatory style acting program. And then I never thought this would happen, but it was just the friends I made that at the second year, you're allowed to audition for the original works program for the last 2 years of it. And I like never imagined that I would be able to like find my own voice. I was like, I'm just a vessel. I'm just an actor. And then the people that I just became really close with, they were like, no, you're a creator. And so I had to write a piece, and I was really into Godard at that time. So I kind of wrote like a Godard-esque like first date scene, but she like keeps breaking the fourth wall and like talking to the audience. And so I got into that program. So that was an additional emphasis of playwriting, directing, and original work composition. And that changed everything for me.
Yeah. And wow. So your friends, so you weren't really acknowledging yourself as a writer, and other people recognized it.
I don't think I had the self-confidence. I was like, oh, I don't have a voice. I have nothing to say. Like, I just use other people's words. And my friends were like, no, that's actually not accurate. So, yeah.
Again, wonderful people.
Yeah.
And also, what a focused young person you were, because you, I mean, to go to, for college, to do the conservatory thing, mm-hmm. like that's,
I didn't at first, and I actually went to one semester at CU Boulder, And I think I was afraid to say that I was an actor. And then I was so miserable there. I think they were in a weird moment of transition. Like, 4 out of 5heads of the department had left, and they didn't know what to do with the freshmen. And so they were teaching us pretty elementary stuff. And I had come from this amazing theater program. So I was like, I'm not being challenged. I know all of this. Like, I'm ready to work. I took it so seriously. And so I left after a semester. One of my friend's brothers had gone to Cornish, and I think I had applied to another school in Washington. And so my senior year, her and I had both flown out to Seattle on our spring break to check out colleges, but my sister was late. They was going to meet me there. Excuse me. And so I went to classes with her brother and found Cornish, and I was like, all you do is, like, one class is for playwriting, one is for voice, one is for movement, one, like, you just get to act and, like, create in every class, and you still get a college degree. So I really wanted to do it, but I think that my parents and my even theater teacher were, like, weary of it. And then when I left Boulder, I was like, I'm just moving to LA when I'm 19. And my mom was like, well, before you do that, well, you really liked that school, Cornish. Like, why don't we focus on that? And so that kind of changed.
Yeah. And I don't mean to make assumptions, but I would assume like a place like that in Seattle is also like nicely removed from the folk, you know, because people who go to like New York and LA,
yeah,
those conservatories or whatever you would call it, like I feel like those are too close to the industry.
It's true. I wish I had almost gotten a little bit more of the business, but then at the same time, or I've said that in the past, but now really thinking about it, like, I am grateful that I had this little bubble of just pure craft and creativity. Because at first I was like, they didn't teach us any business elements, but...
Yeah, but I don't think people learn that in LA and New York either, or even at Yale, right? Like, they...
Yeah, maybe.
Everyone just learns.
And I got this, like, craft. Unadulterated, just like...
Yeah. But if you're learning the craft in LA or New York, you're distracted by...
Yeah, and you think you're going to leave and book something. Yeah,
and the idea of, you know...
Yes.
Like, it's... I feel... Well, obviously, I'm an idealist because I'm involved in a nonprofit film festival.
Yeah.
But yeah, obviously, yeah. Focusing on the work and the craft instead of glamour and success, I think is really healthy for a young person.
So by the end of college, I was like, I'm not going to try to become a commercial actor when I was just set on that. I was like, I'm just going to do experimental theater and have a theater. I'm going to move to New York. I had all these ideas. And then for my senior year, me and one of my best friends at college created this two-woman show called Fancy Guts and Ghosts. And it was all set in and around an inflatable pool filled with styrofoam peanuts. And it was amazing. Like, I remember an underclassman came and they're like, that was like having a religious experience being in that audience for me. And someone came and invited us to do it at a theater in Seattle. And then we actually got invited to the New York Fringe Festival with it. So I was like on that route for a while, just doing theater and experimental theater. And then kind of slowly like, wait, actually though, I still love movies and I'd like to be paid eventually. So it was a long way around.
And at Cornish, did they have some cameras to put people on camera, or was it fully stage oriented?
There was one class that was like audition for camera, and this woman who's like a local casting director taught it, and I loved that class. Most people just like didn't care, and I remember I remember her crying when I went up and did something, and she was like, oh my God, I don't know. It was really nice. And then I was like, we need an acting for camera. So I advocated and I got them to start one. And the teacher, it was so bad. There was only like 5 of us taking it. People dropped off. It was just a waste of time. And we were so busy as seniors that I talked to the other people and everyone was like, I don't want to do this. So I talked to our dean and I was like, our chair. And I was like, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. And so we pulled ourselves out of it, and I felt really bad for the guy, but I was like, this is a waste of our time.
Yeah, you need the right program.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would have been, because Lord knows, I mean, how different could it be going from stage to camera?
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's very, very different skill set.
Yeah. So when I moved to LA, I definitely focused on getting it on camera.
So right after graduation, you knew you were coming down to LA?
Oh, no, or? No. We did the, like, New York Fringe Festival for a while. I traveled. I went and worked with a children's theater company in New Zealand for a while.
Wow, that's amazing.
And then we went I went back to Colorado and I had formed a theater collective at that point with some people from college and then some people they went to high school with. And so we built a show in my hometown of Colorado called Gastropod, about two snails living under one shell. Four of us built it and the three other came out and saw it. And I got us nonprofit status, so we were all over the country, but we could like support each other in building shows. And then I moved to San Francisco with one of my friends, and we were gonna do our own work, but it didn't seem quite like the right timing for her. And finally I was like, I can't wait. So I started auditioning for plays and just worked back to back for 3 years, just doing theater in San Francisco and any indie film and student film I could do. And then eventually it was like, okay, now it's time to go to LA.
Yeah. I love the Bay Area. Yeah. God, it's such a great area.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think like you become a big fish there, like in a small pond. And I'm so grateful I did that before moving to LA. 'Cause then I had like a professional theater resume. I had a little bit more confidence and just like worked on like as, you know, in my 20s, like creating like a life where you're not just dependent on like booking something, because you really need that before moving to LA.
Oh my God, you do. It's the life stuff.
Yes.
Can be so hard.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. If you come here, it's as a third generation Californian, like the idea of someone the day after they finish high school in the Midwest coming out to LA. I just like, no, how can you be prepared?
So glad my mom was like, no, you're not moving out to LA to do acting yet.
Yeah, I know. And everyone says, everyone out there is rude. I'm like, no, us natives are nice, but you're just meeting all the other people who came here for the wrong reasons. And it's like people are being rude to each other for no reason.
Well, if you're just like, if you're so hungry to succeed, but you're willing to like sabotage other people or cut in line or do anything, then it's not going to be sustainable, because people are going to be like, you're a monster.
That's true. That's true. All right. So when you get here, what happened next?
My sister Lucy had already lived here for a long time. And so her and her husband wanted to move anyway. So they got a new place with extra room. So I like rented out from them. So I got this instant just like family. And then 2 years into it, they had a baby. So I like got to raise a kid. Just started doing it, you know. One of the reasons I moved to LA is this. I was in this play in San Francisco called Desdemona by Paula Vogel. It's like a take on Othello, but with the women. And this woman came to see it, and she contacted me, and she ran a theater in LA, but she just happened to be there for like 3 hours and wanted to see a show. So she picked my show, and she was like, I want to interview you. We kept in touch as correspondents, and she was like, you should move to LA. And the week I moved, the day after I moved, she was like, hey, did you move yet? I'm producing this play and one of the actors just dropped out. They're having auditions tomorrow. You have to come. And I went and I booked it. So within a week of being here, I was in a play. And so I did like and then joined her theater company. So I think the first couple of years I was mostly doing theater. So it gave me a really like an amazing artistic home as I tried to figure out the whole film stuff and like go through bad agents and did student films. And, you know, it was a while before I booked anything legit.
I love hearing that, though, because one of the things, I don't know, I'm just going to share a pet peeve, I guess, which is that when LA does have a really... I mean, it's a healthy indie theater scene.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people come here to act and ignore it.
Yeah.
And instead of embracing it and seeing it as a way, forget networking and stuff, although it has that too, but just to, you know, it's like going to the gym for an actor, right?
Exactly.
Going on stage.
Well, and I just love like the people that I was in that first play with. It's like I'm in touch with all of them still. And it's like they're all succeeding now. It's like, okay, he's on that TV show, he's like in that movie. And then like I did probably five plays in LA. Most were in those first couple of years, and it's like those are the people that now are like succeeding and becoming, you know, recurring guest stars or series regulars. And it's really cool to see like the people that stuck with it and worked hard.
And you mentioned the show you wrote and stuff. Did you continue to do that too, or were you focusing on just
Yeah, so I was just doing other, and then, you know, a couple years in, people were like, okay, I know you want it to happen, this acting thing, but, like, you have to produce your own work. And so I decided, I made my first film, which was called Thirsty Girl. It was about a girl that was consumed, who was obsessed with the water crisis in LA and like the drought. And so, but she's really avoiding the fact that her mom's dying of cancer and she doesn't want it. She can't deal with that. And so she's trying to save LA from the drought, but she's not drinking water. So she's going insane and dying. So it was also like my mom was dying. And so it was, and I was really concerned about the drought in LA. And so it was kind of like my way to work through some of that.
Right, so not exactly an analogy. It was pretty personal. Right?
Yes.
So sorry to hear about that.
Yeah, thank you. But yeah, I mean, I had just such an amazing experience. And then also like a very challenging experience with certain. I just learned so much, but I'm really proud of how that one turned out. And then went to a bunch of festivals. And so that kind of gave me the bug. So I produced it. And it was very challenging with who I asked to direct, a former friend. But then it was like, wow, I actually think I could do this of direct because I basically did in a lot of ways.
You asked someone to direct for you and then you found on the days that you had to step in to make sure it came out right.
Yes. And I mean, and there were certain things that he did that absolutely, but I learned of like, oh, I think I actually could do this when I didn't think that I could. And so then I produced a bunch of things. And then Lou was the first thing I've ever directed.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but like, especially when you come up through theater, it's even harder to direct theater while being on stage, right? Like, people I know who've done a lot of theater always, I either direct or I act, but I'm not going to do both at the same time because theater, you really do need to be sitting right where the audience is to watch. Whereas film, directing a film, a lot of people are able to jump on both sides of the camera because like there's separate periods for you to do each.
Absolutely. The one exception was that Fancy Guts and Ghosts play. No professor had ever agreed to direct a senior thesis, but one of our professors did, and because we wrote it. And then he just didn't get it. And he just, like, I think he kept wanting us to just write more. I'm like, no, this is the script. So we ended up firing our professor. And I loved him. He was so talented. He had directed us both in a Shakespeare play. He was so talented, but he just didn't get this. And so our other friend was like, you guys have to direct yourselves. And so we started and we're like, this is going really, really well. So we'd have like guest people just come in and watch. And then he and his wife came to the performance and they were like, oh my God, you were right. We didn't see it. And like, we couldn't have directed this.
Can I open the potential can of gender worms? And because you've mentioned two directors who didn't get it now.
Uh-huh.
And both were Y chromosome Americans.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, I actually think in a lot of ways, I mean, even Lou, like I see a healthy, honest perspective in your work.
Thank you.
That is female. And is it like dudes always think they can direct and then they just don't get?
I don't think all dudes, but
I think very often I guess I'm saying this because now I've been doing this podcast for 4 years and I've just talked to so many women who male directors don't get the material.
Well, yeah, I think that it definitely can be. And that, I think males are inherently more confident and like,
and
ego driven or at least like ego driven. So like maybe think that they're directing before they're actually ready or like, yeah, direct before they're ready. Or have they really, really put like thought and consideration of what they're saying? I'm not, obviously there's amazing male directors, obviously,
yeah, and there's male directors and non-binary directors, but there's directors who get the material and see their job is to be loyal to the material. But there's also, especially early on, there's so many people who just like, well, it doesn't really resonate for me. I'm going to change it.
Yeah.
Instead of realizing that it doesn't resonate for you because, you know, you live in a world of dude privilege, I guess.
Right. Right. So.
Well,
yeah,
anyway,
I don't know.
That's my soapbox as the stepdad of a 14-year-old girl, yeah. I guess. But
yeah.
So Lou was the first time you directed
yes.
film.
Yep. It's something that I had written kind of on a whim during the pandemic. And it's very simple, but I think one night, you know, maybe it was when I was locked down, like out of work, locked down in my apartment. And maybe I was a little inebriated. And I think I watched like a Fellini film or something. And then I started thinking about Lou, my cat that I had given away after college, and just feeling just so dreadful about it, as I have always felt if I think about it. Because for those who haven't seen it, I had a cat in college and we were like best friends. We were so close. And then I realized I wanted to leave Seattle and go travel, go to New Zealand. I didn't know where I was going to end up, and was like, oh no, I have this cat. I didn't think about this when I was 19 and like lonely, and I got this cute little kitten. And so I tried to give him away to a coworker, and that just did not work. And so then I gave him to this woman that my neighbor told me about, that had this like cat commune, like an hour outside of Seattle with all these cats roaming around on this land. And it seemed wonderful, but I'm just like, I can't believe I gave, he was my son. So I just decided to kind of explore that of like, if he had come to my door.
And you know, the creativity in Lou always impressed me. And now that I know a brief history of you uh-huh. with the experimental theater mm-hmm. and appreciating Godard and stuff. Now I get how the healthy weirdness of it is I don't know.
Yeah. No, definitely. Yeah. Like Godard, Fellini, and Pee Wee Herman are like, that's like my blend. I really like.
And by the way, they would have loved Pee Wee's Playhouse.
Oh, yeah.
So creative, yeah.
I think even just rewatching Big Top Pee Wee over the pandemic, because I was obsessed with all the Pee Wee movies. I had the Pee Wee doll. Like, it was like, my sisters were like, no, you watched Big Top Pee Wee and Pee Wee's Big Adventure every single day for over a year, like for a couple of years. And I was like, this explains so much about my personality, because it's just so absurd and zany that it is really like, I can't make anything that's not a little.
Look, you have me happy because absurdness is wonderful. I mean, you know, whatever. Monty Python's entire ethos mm-hmm. was something completely different, and it was always absurd.
Yeah.
So, yeah, wonderful. People need to carry these torches.
Yeah, or Strange Candy. Or Strangers with Candy. Like, finding that in college, like, that was, it was like, okay, this is my language.
And actually, did you, when you got here, were you, you never used the word improv. Did you ever experiment with that stuff?
I mean, I did, and I was on an improv troupe in high school, and then when I was in Seattle, and then when I moved back to Colorado, kind of before moving to San Francisco, I auditioned and got into another troupe. I took a little UCB here. I like, part of me wishes I had done more. It's expensive, and like, saw it, like, I was seeing, like, you know, it can be clicky.
Yeah.
But then like, I like, there was amazing people, and people that I watched on stage, I was like, oh my God, they're amazing. Now I see that they're on TV. Like, it can be a really great tool. I just think that, there's so many different ways. And now I'm like, oh God, I feel like it's almost too late to go down that rabbit hole. But
yeah. Well, I just asked because Strangers with Candy obviously was born out of Second City.
Exactly.
And
I don't know. I might still go back, or The Groundling sounds really cool because it's character based. But I definitely love improv and like, kind of utilize it just in my, you know, acting or whatnot. But
you can also just stick to writing, mm-hmm. writing shorts and directing them and infusing them with your point of view, which is original, mm-hmm. which is all we ask for on the indie circuit.
Yeah.
So Lou was a pandemic production.
Yep.
Done quite easily with a couple friends and you and one actor on screen.
Yes.
And some cat actors.
Yep. My cats make an appearance. I was very lucky. My friend Andrew is, he's a director himself and then a DP, and he is just so talented. And I had him and his wife over when, or me, my boyfriend did. And my boyfriend and him are writing partners on a few things. And I was like, okay, this is the one thing I'm ever going to ask you to shoot for free for me. And he's allergic to cats, like extremely. And he's like, really? This is the one? but he was such a trooper. And so he asked one of their other friends and he let us use his camera for free. And then Michaela, who did Jeff Can't Swim, she AD'd it for me, and her and John came and helped because we had to like switch the shoot the day of because my actor double booked. And so we lost our sound person. So like Michaela was like, okay, I'll figure out the sound equipment. Like it was like the four of us. So yeah.
Which is great. And heck, the guy with the cat allergy, I mean, it was COVID time anyway, so you got to wear a mask.
He had to wear a mask anyways.
With the allergy.
Yeah, and then the actor I got was just incredible.
and you casted that, right?
Yeah. I couldn't believe it that, you know, it was like an old man in a cat suit, like, you know, high drama, like beautiful emotion and whatever. And I got 300 people submitting, and then I called that, or like I asked for like 30 people for tapes, and I got like only like four people didn't. I couldn't believe that the people were willing to do that, but I got some beautiful auditions, like so many made me cry. But then this one guy, like Bill Knight, it was a no brainer. He was amazing.
Yeah. He just When that door opens and you see his face,
I know,
like it just sells it.
Yeah, I know. He was just turning 90. I think he was 89 when he did it.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
He's actually super, and I would say this as someone with elderly, whatever. Yeah, that's amazing.
It blew my mind. And like, I was like, can you get down on the ground and lap up this milk? And he was like, yeah, you guys might have to help me back up. I have titanium knees. And so he like got down, we like put some pads down. He got down and like lapped up the milk and we helped him back. I couldn't believe how game he was.
Isn't it amazing how actors, even at 89, like, they're still actors.
Yeah.
Like the hunger is there.
Oh, yeah.
For the performance. It's so funny. Yeah. In your mind, you're like, well, I don't know. Someone who's 89 is going to be like, no, or whatever. But
yeah.
No, he's as game as someone who just moved to town.
Exactly. And he's like, yo, this is great. He's like, I'm booking all the time because everyone in my category has died off.
I'm actually not surprised he books all the time, too, because he has that presence, right?
Yeah, such a face. Yeah,
it is funny. That's part of it for sure. And you're great in it.
Oh, thank you.
And I was thinking about it when you were on your way over. I was thinking, you know, one of the wild things is like a lot of times when people write for themselves, I feel like maybe they overwrite themselves because they're like, this is my chance to shine.
Right.
And really you gave yourself the understated job and let him be the...
Oh, yeah.
You're like the straight person and he's the comic relief in a way, as in a comedy duo.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty impressed with the maturity that you wrote it with.
Cool. Thank you. Yeah. That's definitely my best friend in college. She was just a star, like just such a bright light. One of the most dynamic performers ever. And we became this kind of duo in college, but I was like, there's no matching her, or there's no overdoing it with her. And so I actually learned like such an amazing lesson performing with her of like coming under and like matching her that way and like filling out the performance in a different way, not trying to like compete with like, so I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but it just reminded me of that, of like,
that makes sense, because really a lot of people lack that skill. A lot of people either disappear when someone else is bigger or fight it and try to be bigger. And yeah, watching two people try to be big
it
on stage at the same time, it's
just
annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's even worse on film, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, and you basically wrote a piece for two.
Yeah.
Yeah. And happy the way it all turned out?
Yeah, I am. Absolutely. It was, you know... a really like simple project. And my goal, I was like, in a dream world, I would have people laugh and cry within. And I was like, it's 3 pages. It's hard to do. It's just under 5 minutes, but it happened where I've had a lot of people cry and laugh. And yeah, I've just been really like touched by
it. It is actually very, yeah, it is. I don't know if I cried, but I'm obviously touched by the story.
Yeah.
But then there's few things funnier than when he looks over and sees that you have cats now.
Yes.
That's a really good laugh.
Yeah. So I have the next couple things I want to direct and I need to do it. It's just, you know.
And are these like things you've been writing or?
Yeah. One of them is my friend wrote a short story and we adapted it together and I'm going to direct that. And then another one I wrote also in the same time I wrote Lou. But it would be, both of them would be a little more expensive. So it's kind of just one of those, like, I feel like I'm resisting asking people for money cause it's so hard to do. But, and then I have a feature I wrote that's a little darker and a little bit more, like set in like kind of realism drama, but trying to always go back and add, like, where can I add a little bit more absurdity?
Right, because that's your voice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you brought up the thing that always hits me in the heart, which is the people who should most be making films and the people who are good at raising money for films are rarely the same people. And I wish there was, like, a better way to, you know, I wish the car salesman types would just say, you know what, I'm just going to devote myself to the talent people. But they're always about themselves because they're car salesman types.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's really hard raising money for movies.
although the nice thing is a lot of things have gotten less expensive.
Yes, this is true.
It used to be a nightmare because you had to develop film and all kinds of things.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
And I am pretty pleased. It seems like, even from when I did Thirsty Girl or my last couple festivals to when I've been doing Lou, it's like no one's really asking for DCPs anymore. And that was like a stupid cost. And it seems like everything's getting more like digital or, you know,
it's affordable. Funny you say that because, yeah, Sherman Oaks Film Festival takes place at a small play stage theater, but has pretty good projection.
Yeah.
I like the fact that we don't have to ask people for DCPs.
Yeah. I actually was shocked. Like, a lot of the festivals I've gotten into have said, we will not accept it. And I was like, that's crazy because that's not what I saw even 5 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. But it just, I don't know, it seems wrong to demand a 5-minute short.
Right?
Do a super expensive conversion.
Yes.
But at the same time, if we ever move over to the Regal, you know, be no choice.
Yeah. Well, hopefully DCP prices are coming down too.
Like, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. And I finally learned how to pull the video file out of one. So if someone sends us one anyway, I can convert it so that the Wi-Fi can use it. Because it's always funny to me when someone's like, here's a DCP. And I'm like, we said a .mov.
Yeah. You make it very clear.
It's so funny. But yeah, so you're dealing. That's funny. So besides, or it's not funny, but besides all the training and acting and all that, now film producer's in your head and you're dealing with all the logistics of filmmaking and moving forward with it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely trying to.
And Lou, it's in my little notes here. It says world premiere. So actually, was Sherman Oaks Film Festival the world premiere for Lou?
Yeah.
First time on screen?
Yeah.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah.
I know that's just the luck of the timing thing. It's not like you saved it for us.
No, but honestly, I'm so glad because it's the only one I've been able to go to as well. And it was just such a positive experience and kept in touch with people that I met. And yeah, it really was such a special festival.
And when you became, for me, it's always cool because Michaela and John are like returning champions.
Yeah.
I mean, she's had they've each had two films there now and then didn't even know that you were associated with them when you became an official selection. So that was, that's always fun.
Yeah, no, that was great. A couple of the people that were in our block that had, it's like the couple retreat. What was it called?
Couples retreat.
Yeah.
Oh, no, guys weekend.
Guys weekend. Yeah. I run into them everywhere. There they come into my bar, Augustine, which is right next to the theater. And then we like ran into each other. So we've like kept in touch. And every time like we get really excited, and we've even talked about like getting together and yeah, it's and then a couple other people we've met there. I just heard back from Allie, or I got a message from Allie who had the bubble in Canada. Yeah, there is just yeah, it was such a cool
you know,
festival.
I appreciate that because obviously our focus. I mean, we rent that theater for 6 hours a night, and we show two and a half hours of films, and then so that we have 3 to 4 for the Q&As and for people to meet and talk. Because honestly, I think the meeting people and enjoying each other's work and then discussing it, that's why you have a film festival. Yeah. You don't have a film like, you know, if it's just about watching things and not talking about it, you might as well stay home and watch TV.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're naming all my favorite people. It's funny you name the guys weekend people because I shouldn't even say this on the microphone, but they're wonderful, and they actually submitted something to another thing I do, and it was brilliant.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I can't get them on the podcast for some reason.
Oh,
I think they all want to do it together or something. Okay. I don't know what it is, but they're becoming my white whale.
Funny.
But good to know that they're friends.
If I see them again, I will tell them how positive it was.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And anything else you got going on? Are you still, you know, doing the... I mean, the world opened up again, so...
Yeah, I actually just booked my first, like, network thing, shot an episode of Goldbergs a few weeks ago that was the most fun ever. I just, I had such a blast. It was my first, like, network comedy, and, yeah.
That's great to hear.
Yeah, I loved every second of it.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so that'll be coming out in, I think, early October, and, yeah, hopefully more to come.
More to come. Yeah, that would be, and it sounds like, not to guilt trip you into it, but you sound like one of those people who will take your successes and then plow some of it back into your own projects.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, I mean, that's the goal.
For sure.
Yeah.
And anything else going on? Anything?
I don't know.
I don't mean to ask such a boring open-ended question, but.
I mean. That's kind of, I guess the big thing is like, yeah, what am I doing next? I feel like there's some resistance and procrastination from taking the next leap of directing the next thing. So.
Right. So, you know what you want to do next.
Yes. It's and like, just... and like, even like guys like fired up where I talked to my makeup artist, talked to my DP, like it was ready to go. And then being like, wait, that was months and months ago. Like it's the getting the money thing. So I just have to.
It is, and you have
dive in,
and you have this integrity thing going on where you where you told all your friends, "I'm not going to ask you to work for free." More than once.
Yep.
Yeah, and plus Lou was such a small ass. Right?
Yeah, that I mean, because that really was like a one day. This is like a pandemic. We're going to try to spend less than
everyone was stuck at home. I'm sure people were delighted to get out.
Yeah, for sure.
But and did you hold it till the pandemic was over for the festival thing? Or did the timing just work out?
The timing just worked out. Because we weren't, like, locked down anymore, but...
Yeah, we were starting to get vaccinated.
Yes. where I think I had just gotten my first shot or something. Or maybe, actually, I had been fully vaccinated, but it was still, like, not everyone was yet. Yeah.
Yeah, and still. Kind of weird.
Yep.
I guess we're not even supposed to go there, but yeah, we thought, I thought everyone would be vaccinated in time for June 2021.
Yeah.
The festival we hold, but no, we were barely like a third.
And now you're seeing productions being like, we don't require vaccinations, like, but like network huge things are now saying so.
Yeah, I know. I finally got it. I avoided it for 2.5 years.
Yeah.
And then. I think I actually got it at the June festival.
Oh, really?
I didn't wear a mask.
Yeah.
Shame on me. You know, but I was, you know, I was like sitting there and I just trusted everybody. But you shouldn't.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad we had your premiere.
I'm so glad.
And then it toured, but you weren't able to go to any.
No. And I'm still hearing back from a couple. I just heard from one in Sweden that they are like, want me to show something next week. And they're like, we'll be in touch about maybe you coming to Sweden. I'm like, are you going to bring me to Sweden? But, yeah, so I, it's a bummer. I haven't gotten to go to any other. It's like a handful of festivals I've been. I think there is one more, in October in Los Angeles that it's going to show.
Oh, cool. That will in a way create bookends for a year of the festival circuit, right?
Yes.
Very cool. Yeah, well, hopefully the Swedish thing, who knows? You know, sometimes these foreign film festivals, like, are sponsored by their national airline or something.
Yeah, who knows?
I know when people hit, when we get an email saying, hey, do you have a hotel allowance or this or that? And I'm like, oh, boy.
No.
Let me share that we put all the money into the theater and staff so that we can show as many films as possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all tricky.
Makes sense.
The same stuff, we go through the same thing you do on the production side.
Yeah.
Well, do you want to mention website or social media for people to follow?
Sure. My website is just karinawolf.com.
See, you've got a cool spelling of the name too, Karina.
Mm-hmm.
Wolfe.
Mm-hmm.
So now people know.
Yep, now people know. And then, yeah, my Instagram's Karina Love Wolf. Because my middle name is Love.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's where people should go. And any plans for once you're done with the festival circuit? You got Lou plans?
I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be part of your...
It's an offer.
Yes,
I
think I said...
Is it official?
I think so.
I didn't want to say anything in the intro. Did you see me stumble during the intro? Because I'm like, oh, wait, if she hasn't...
No, I think I said yes.
Oh, you said yes. Well, then someday people get to enjoy Lou on the Discovery Indie Film TV series, which, amusingly, this probably will come out in December.
Okay.
Because I have to bank a lot of these so I can make it through the festival. But today, season 6 came out.
Oh, that's congratulations.
Thank you. And of all the crazy things, by the way, you're yet another ballet person who's been on this podcast.
Oh, funny.
I'm starting to learn... And amusingly, most of the ballet performers have a UCB story.
Funny.
Where they're like, yeah, it reminded me. You know, there's like a thing. Like, but of course, it's not as... Like, ballet school makes UCB seem uncompetitive, right?
Oh,
It's such good training, I think, for actors.
Yes. Oh, the discipline is wild.
It's insane. And such a young age.
Yes.
It probably does have an effect on the rest of your life to go through that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And then I think even just physical awareness while acting, for sure.
For sure, yeah. You can all grace, for sure. Mm-hmm. Graceful people are a joy to watch. I cannot get enough of dance in film, actually.
Yeah, I know. I wish I was still a dancer, but...
I'm sure you're a very good dancer for fun.
Yes, I think so.
Much better than us untrained, uncoordinated types.
Right.
Well, my apologies for not knowing off the top of my head that Lou was in.
Oh.
But I'm glad to hear
no
it.
No worries. Maybe I didn't even make... I think I... I don't know. I'm sure. We know now.
That's wonderful. Well, people might have to wait a little while. But actually, I think the next season should be January.
Oh, cool.
So that's not... And if this comes out in December, that's kind of perfect. So just wait a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And then go to Amazon Prime Video. I guess, should I do my ending spiel thing?
Yeah.
People should go to Amazon Prime Video, type in Discover Indie Film, and enjoy seasons 1 through 6. And then in season 7, you'll see Karina's film, Lou, which... is absolutely wonderful and original and unique. And what else do I do in the wrap up? Please like and subscribe to the podcast, whatever you're listening to on. Give it 5 stars. If you watch that TV series, be nice. Give it 5 stars, mm-hmm. You know? I always laugh about the fact that there's been, I think like at this point, 130 or 140 films in the series so far. And there's not like 140 5-star reviews. So, you know, you can't even get people to review their own work.
I know.
It's so funny.
Yeah.
But I still ask at the end of the podcast for people to like, subscribe, give stars. You know what? Go find... do you have your earlier films? Are they online or anything?
Thirsty Girls on Vimeo.
On Vimeo. So, you know, go to KarinaWolf.com. I bet it links there or something, or it's embedded there.
It is.
Like and give that 5 stars. Write nice comments. It's good for the algorithms. Even ignore the algorithms. It's good for Karina, too. Yeah. You should be nice to people. Life is too damn short. Don't troll the people you don't like. Support those you do.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, I know. I'm on this soapbox now because, like, I'll love an indie film that shows at a festival, and then it'll, my phone just distracted me. And then like a feature film made for $5,000. And then people go on IMDb and write a scathing review saying, this was so low budget. And it's like, well, you watched a low budget film.
Yeah.
Why don't you appreciate it for what it is?
They made a feature for $5,000. That's to be applauded.
Yeah. And if you're not complaining about the story, if you're complaining about the production values, fuck off.
Yeah.
You're that's like going to a hockey game and being mad they're not playing baseball.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my soapbox. So go to discoverindiefilm.com for info about that TV series or this podcast. It's at DIFWINS on social media. Lou had its world premiere at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival last November. It's coming up again this November. If you want to learn more about that festival, it's ShermanOaksFF.com and at ShermanOaksFF on social media. Although my brain just told me, oh yeah, this podcast might be held till December. My bad. So you just missed the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. But every June we have Film Invasion Los Angeles, and you can learn more about that if you go to FilmInvasionLA.com and it's at FilmInvasionLA on social media. Karina, it was a pleasure getting to know you a little better.
Yeah, you too.
And I really appreciate the work, and I'm happy for you. It sounds like things are going well. Congrats on booking the Goldbergs.
Thank you.
And thank you, everyone, for listening.